Chicken in your mountain town.
Good evening and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. I'm Laura Palmisano. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. On today's show, we'll hear from a domestic violence survivor, law enforcement, and social service providers. We begin our program with a story I reported. It aired earlier this week. Miriam is 25 years old. Born in Mexico, she came to the U.S. with her parents when she was 11. She lived in Las Vegas before moving to Colorado 2 years ago. She left to escape a man who was abusing her.
When I first met him, he had no job, he had no house, he had no money, and he was on drugs. And when he met me, he knew I had a car, had a good job, and I was doing really good. I had a house. So that's when he first started talking to me. I guess that's when it first started, because he came to me just because I had all those things that he didn't have.
She says her boyfriend Fabio started taking financial advantage of her. Then the situation turned violent.
Physical abuse started whenever I got pregnant, when he found out I was pregnant. He was telling me that it was my fault, that I wasn't taking care of myself, that we didn't need a child because we wasn't going to be able to party or have money to go out, you know? And then he started to hit me and throwing me in the bed and doing the sexual abuse.
Miriam says the violence got so bad, she almost lost her child.
I had a really bad pregnancy, so that's one of the reasons my parents went to visit me, because I was having a surgery and they wanted to see if I was okay. And that's when they found out about domestic violence that I was going through.
Miriam's parents brought her to live with them in Western Colorado. After her son was born, she says Fabio started calling her, threatening to take her child away. That's when she decided to seek help. She contacted Hilltop's Tri-County Resource Center. The nonprofit organization provides assistance to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. It serves Delta, Montrose, and Ouray counties. Amy Guadri Chavez says Tri-County responded to nearly 1,500 crisis calls last year.
We define domestic violence as a pattern of abusive behavior in any relationship that's used by one partner to gain or maintain power and control over another partner.
Guadri Chavez says domestic violence can be physical, sexual, emotional, psychological, and even economic abuse. According to federal data, more than 1 in 3 women and more than 1 in 4 men in the U.S. have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner. According to Colorado data, more than 10,000 domestic violence misdemeanor cases were filed last year. But that's an improvement. Based on a 10-year average, the number of domestic violence misdemeanor cases filed by the state's district courts has dropped nearly 13%. Jesse Cox is the commander of the City of Delta Police Department. Cox teaches a course at the police academy on how to respond to and investigate domestic violence calls. He says it's important for officers to make sure victims feel safe.
You know, it's common for an abusive spouse to say, well, without me, you're not going to have any money, or I'm going to take you off the insurance and the kids won't have insurance, or I'll take the kids away from you.
Cox says it's against the state's victims' rights law for abusers to do those things, but usually victims don't know that.
So using our officers and educating them on victims' rights and utilizing our victim services coordinator, we can really educate them on what's available to them and how we can help them.
Cox says under the Colorado Victim Rights Act, the abusive person can't take away things like housing, transportation, or kids. He says it also puts automatic criminal restraining orders into effect. Miriam, the domestic violence survivor, is grateful for the help she got, but she says she wants people to recognize they have a role to play too.
One day that I was being abused by my boyfriend, he was pulling my hair, getting me out of the car, and he was really, really like pushing me and kicking me and doing all this kind of stuff. And I was calling for help in English and Spanish, and nobody would like to call the police. So I really would like to tell those people out there, if they see a situation like this, that they should call 911 or try to help them, because they could be saving somebody's life.
Miriam has a message for other victims.
Some girls are so scared, especially in this Hispanic culture. Some girls are told that if they go and ask for help, they'll be deported or they'll take their kids away, you know?
Miriam says this isn't true. She says agencies like Tri-County are there to help victims, and they kept her information private.
I really encourage them to go and try to get help for them, especially if they have any kids. I mean, the kids, they need their moms to be okay or their parents to be okay.
Miriam is now in a transitional home and plans to start taking college classes soon. She says she hopes to someday help other victims of domestic violence and be a role model for her son. For KVNF, I'm Laura Palmisano. In case you are just joining us, we are observing Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Next, we'll hear an interview with Jesse Cox. He's the commander of the City of Delta Police Department. You work for the City of Delta. Can you tell me about programs or initiatives the City Police Department has to respond to domestic violence situations?
Well, our agency, we handle basically two sides or two aspects of the domestic violence investigation or the call. Obviously, the officers are responsible for responding to calls for service, emergencies, and doing the actual investigation side of the case. Then if it's determined that domestic violence has taken place, then we get our victim services program involved. Becky Havens is the victim services coordinator for the police department, and she has volunteers that work with her, and they respond to each one of these calls, and they work with the victims. They provide them, you know, information from the Victim Rights Act on what their rights are. And basically, they work with them and stay with them and try to just basically keep them informed and make them feel safe. If that means moving them out of the house or whatever, they can work with them on that until the court hearing.
How many domestic violence calls did the City of Delta respond to last year?
Last year, we made 49 arrests for domestic violence. This year, I believe the number was we're up to 32 so far this year. And that may not be the number of calls that we respond to, but that's what we actually found there to be domestic violence, and we made an arrest on the case.
I believe you teach a class at the police academy on how officers should respond to domestic violence calls. Can you tell me about your work with the academy?
Every class that comes through the academy, they have to go through X number of hours of different topics to become a certified police officer. And one of those areas is they have to have a minimum of 8 hours of training in the area of domestic violence investigation. So that's a class that I volunteer my time. The city volunteers my time to go out there. And I teach that particular course, that particular section for the academies as they come out.
What kind of things are you teaching to officers or future officers?
You know, it's a wide variety of things. You know, we start with just the officer safety aspects of responding to those calls, because those calls can be very volatile and can be very dangerous for the officer. But the investigation side of domestic is different than most calls that officers will investigate. And the reason I say that is it's not always simple for the victim to cooperate. You know, you respond to an average call out in town. The victims usually who called you, they're wanting to cooperate, they want to help you. In domestic violence calls, it can be somewhat different. They may not want to assist the law enforcement agency in a prosecution. They may just want the officers to get there to make them feel safe, make sure everything is okay, and then leave. And that's for a variety of reasons. You know, it could be because you are dealing with this individual's spouse or significant other, and they have many reasons why they wouldn't want to cooperate. And it's not because they don't want to cooperate with law enforcement. It's because a lot of times it's fear. It's fear of dependence on the other person. They may feel like they need them to survive or support the children. It could be just fear for their own safety if they cooperate with law enforcement. So we give these potential officers, these cadets, we give them, you know, techniques to use in interviewing, and we give them indicators to watch for in these victims as they're interviewing them, to really try to determine what happened and try to see if there is a potential that maybe nothing did happen, or maybe something did happen, but this person just has a reason why they're afraid or unwilling to cooperate, and find a way to get to that truth so we can assist them.
As a law enforcement officer, when you get a domestic violence call you have to respond to, what are the things you go through to make sure that the victim is getting the help they need?
You know, it starts with the initial contact. You know, it's very important in a domestic violence situation to get that potential victim away from, you got to separate the parties. You know, if you have a husband and a wife, just for example, and they're in a dispute, you get called to the house, it's very important that you separate those two when you talk to them. Because if you have them both together, you know, the husband or the wife, whoever it is, if you're, you know, in this situation, we'll say the wife is the potential victim. If the husband can hear what she's telling to us, she's going to be very reluctant to be very detailed and be very upfront with us if she's afraid of him. So we know that we have to get those people separated, get them out of earshot of each other. And then we can, you know, we can let her know. You know, if we start to getting indications that she's nervous or she's afraid to talk to us, you know, we can let her know that we understand where she's coming from. We understand that she's afraid and we understand why she's afraid. And then we can explain further how we can help her overcome those fears. You know, if she's concerned, you know, it's common for an abusive spouse to say, well, without me, you're not going to have any money, or I'm going to take you off the insurance and the kids won't have insurance, or I'll take the kids away from you. And there's sections in the Victims' Rights Act that prevent, you know, spouses from doing those particular things. And quite often victims don't understand that. So using our officers and educating them on victims' rights and utilizing our victim services coordinator, we can really educate them on what's available to them and how we can help them. And a lot of times that'll make them feel comfortable and they can open up to us.
What is the Victims' Rights Act?
The Victims' Rights Act is basically legislation that was put together to afford victims certain rights in these types of situations, mainly domestic violence situations. You know, it says that if a female or a male, if a spouse does report domestic violence on the other one can't take certain actions against them. You know, for example, if the female files for domestic violence or, you know, basically files the report, law enforcement determines that there's a crime and he's arrested, he can't retaliate against her by taking her off of his insurance or by, you know, kicking her out of the house or taking her car away because maybe the title, you know, to the car is in his name. You know, they're married, so it's both people's car. So the Victims' Rights Act just, it basically protects the victim from retaliation from the suspect or the perpetrator in the incident.
Does it only protect married couples? What about situations where people are domestic partnership or boyfriend, girlfriend?
The Victims' Rights Act protects victims of almost all persons' crimes. It doesn't even have to be domestic violence related. You know, it goes into so many different things, like they have a right to be notified of, you know, important action being taken in court or decisions being made by the district attorney or the prosecution. It's not just specific to domestic violence. So, you know, anytime you have a crime against a person, which could be assault or a robbery or, you know, it could be anybody that's a victim of a crime, it's a crime against a person, and it will apply. And those rights by law have to be explained to them by a certain time in court to meet those rights acts. So, yes, it's for all domestic situations, which isn't just a married couple. Domestic violence is categorized as married or in an intimate relationship, have a child together, or in its past or current relationship. So it doesn't have to be a current relationship. It could be a past relationship to qualify for domestic as well.
Can you tell me more about laws, protections, or requirements for law enforcement officers or protections or things for victims?
Yeah, whenever there's a crime against a person, whether it be for domestic violence or any other crime, there's an automatic criminal restraining order put into place. Once the suspect is arrested, that suspect cannot get out of jail until they've seen a judge. So, you know, most people, you go to jail, you can bond right out if you have the means. Domestic violence, you're required to stay incarcerated until you're advised by a judge of your crime and of the stipulations of your bond. And a domestic violence case isn't a regular case where the victim has the option of whether or not to file charges. You know, a simple assault or a harassment between acquaintances, the victim always has that option to whether or not they want to press charges against the suspect. Domestic violence, that's not the case. In Colorado, if the officer learns of domestic violence or a potential domestic violence situation, we're bound by law to investigate that. And if we determine a crime has been committed, even if the victim is adamant they don't want charges pressed, we still will make an arrest because that's what's required by law.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Jesse Cox. He's the commander of the City of Delta Police Department. You are listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano. Chip Manili is the program supervisor for Hilltop's Tri-County Resource Center. Robert Thomas is the chief of police for the city of Delta. They are live in the studio with me. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello. Good evening. Good evening.
Chip, first question for you. What is the Tri-County Resource Center?
Tri-County Resource Center is the sexual assault and domestic violence advocacy organization for three counties, Delta, Montrose, and Ouray counties. And we provide services for the victims and survivors of those crimes, everything from emergency shelter to advocacy outreach. We provide legal advocacy. We also provide support groups, anything we can do to support those survivors of domestic violence.
How would people get a hold of your group?
The best way to call us is on our 24-hour crisis line, and that number is 970-874-4941. That line is manned by either staff or trained volunteers 365 days a year.
Chief Thomas, how does Delta Police work with agencies like Tri-County?
Well, our organization is it's very important for our organization to develop partnerships and collaboration with Tri-County and other organizations that provide services to our victims in our community. It's extremely important to us to work together as a team. And in working together as a team, I think it's important that we remember that we're keeping our focuses on the victim and providing those necessary services for the victim, working together in collaboration.
So if an officer responds to a domestic violence call and they see that a victim expresses interest in getting social services, how would you, as an officer, tell them how to get those services?
Well, we work through our victim's advocate, which is Becky Havens. And Becky Havens is extremely knowledgeable about the services that are available for victims of crime. So we utilize Becky Havens quite a bit in our organization because of her knowledge, her expertise, and of the resources that she knows of within our community.
Chip, if a domestic violence victim does want help, what should they do?
The best thing to do is to, our first stress is safety. So if someone's in danger, please call 911. Don't wait, and Delta Police or the Sheriff's Department will respond. We work very closely with Becky Havens. I talk to her almost on a daily basis. But if they want to call us at 874-4941, all of our services are free and confidential. And we'll sit down, we do education, come up with a safety plan, really let them know what the options are. One of the options is reporting to the Delta Police Department. They've been very supportive. They're very professional. We just work really closely together to, once again, provide the services that are necessary for the survivor or victim of domestic violence.
Chief Thomas, why is domestic violence an important issue to you?
It's a very important issue to me. Since growing up, as a young man, my mom was abused by my dad, and pushing, striking, and pretty much holding her hostage, not allowing her to leave the house except for under his condition. And it was just about power and control. He had some anger management issues. And so to this day, domestic violence victims, they're dear to my heart. Because I can empathize and sympathize with what they're going through.
You also work, you're also on the board of a child abuse mm-hmm. resource center in Montrose.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that and how domestic violence and child abuse are often correlated?
Yes. Well, it's been my experience as the chief here in Delta that the majority of the children that we come in contact with are victims of domestic violence. Their mom or even their dad at some point in time have been victims of domestic violence. And we see that these kids are eventually they become victims of domestic violence, and they may even become abusers. And so The bottom line with the Dolphin House is they provide forensic interviews and forensic exams for those children who have been abused by parents. Usually it's a parent or some loved one within their home.
Robert, can you tell me what kind of changes you made to the Delta Police Department in regard to handling domestic violence calls when you became chief?
Well, in my opinion, upon arriving in the city of Delta as chief, I noticed that the police department was more a reactive organization versus proactive. And I don't believe that we had at that time the full support of organizations because of the style of policing that was being conducted within the organization. Now we're focused on community, we're focused on building those bridges and those gaps with other organizations and partnerships and building that trust in the community, but also building that trust with other organizations like Tri-County, like the Dolphin House, and other organizations that provide services to victims of crime.
In a conversation we had before this interview, you told me that before your time at the Delta Police Department, there were instances where officers were perpetrators of domestic violence and it was a community of silence and other officers weren't investigating those cases. Can you tell me about why that happened and what has changed?
Well, years ago in law enforcement, prior to the Victims' Rights Act, there was a code of silence among law enforcement in which they would respond to a domestic violence. And if the woman or even the man claimed they would indicate to us, no, nothing happened and it's okay, you can leave. And eventually the officers would get called back to the home because of a domestic violence situation. But once again, the officers, no action would be taken. And as a result of that, we had victims that were ended up dead or seriously injured as a result of. And so the VRA is extremely important to our communities. And within the law enforcement field, there was this code of silence in which you didn't report a cop in the instance that he was a suspect or even a victim of domestic violence. So it was pretty much swept underneath the table. And that's no longer the case in this day and age. There is mandatory reporting. If an officer knows of a crime that has been committed, he has to immediately report that, such as domestic violence.
Let's continue on the topic of a culture of silence. How is a culture of silence across the U.S. compromising victims of domestic violence?
Well, in larger organizations, I think there is a culture of this code of silence in which officers protect one another. But I feel that that's slowly going away with the education and component, and also the laws that have changed, in which officers are mandatory reporters, and they must report. If they observe a crime or they have to take some sort of action if they know that a crime is about to be committed or was committed.
Chip, can you tell me about the art project that Tri-County has created and has on display at the Montrose Library?
Yeah, it kind of fits into the sort of the code of silence. What it is we took a full-size wedding dress that one of our co-workers donated, and one of my advocates, Shelley Fellin, did this project. And on the front of the wedding dress, there's all the, we kind of did a collage of all the stuff from wedding magazines and all the kind of hearts and flowers stuff about weddings. On the back side of the wedding dress is the reality of domestic violence and domestic abuse. There's statistics about how many women are beaten and what domestic violence is, and the photographs and of, you know, so it really shows the two sides. On the outward side, everything, I think this plays into the code of silence, is that, oh, everything's fine, everything's okay, it's all wonderful. Yep. But what goes on behind closed doors and what happens privately, that's where the abuse happens. So this is just a really graphic way to show the two sides of that.
If I'm correct, the dress was donated by a victim of domestic violence, and it's a vintage dress from the 40s. Can you tell me more about that?
The dress was donated by one of our colleagues whose mother I do believe was a victim of domestic violence. And it's just a, you know, it's a full-size wedding dress. We were able to get a mannequin to put it on. And it's just a really powerful, it's a moving piece of really art that really demonstrates the two sides of domestic violence. We've gotten a lot of positive comments on that. It's not easy to look at. It also sort of really brings the whole idea of that sanctity of marriage, that somehow it's, you know, once you're married, it's all good. And for a lot of people it is, but for a lot of people it isn't. And that's our job to make sure that the people that are in those relationships, one way that it happens is they get isolated. Victims get isolated and they don't know what's going on and nobody knows what's going on. So it's just a way to really demonstrate that you might think, what I always tell people is that almost everybody that I know probably knows somebody who's affected by domestic violence, and they probably don't know it. They're probably not aware of it.
Chip, what is the importance of Domestic Violence Awareness Month?
I always say that every month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but really Domestic Violence is a Awareness Month is a national campaign to bring domestic violence to the awareness and forefront of our culture and our community. So it's just a chance for everybody to get out there and really remind people that this is an important issue and it's going on every day. Women die every day, children die every day from domestic violence.
In the story we heard at the top of the program, we heard from Miriam, a young woman who has gotten services from Hilltop and the Tri-County Resource Center. And her message to other victims is go out and if you need help, get it. Don't be silent. What are your thoughts on this subject?
I've worked with Miriam. She's an amazing young woman. What she's been through and where she's come is amazing. Absolutely. If you're in a situation, if you're in a violent situation, reach out, get help, but please do it carefully. What we know is that the lethality for women really goes up exponentially once they leave or reach out for help. So please do it in a safe way. If you need to reach out to us on our confidential line, do that. It needs to be a time when maybe he's at work or he's not home. Just do it safely, but absolutely reach out. There are so, when I work with clients, when they come in, there are so many resources available to them. You know, like I said, they've been told they're isolated. They've been told nobody will believe them, that they'll lose their children. There's a whole list of things. But they're between the police department, us, Health and Human Services, mental health. The list goes on and on of people that are really there to support them. So they're going to have a high level of support.
One last question for you, Chief Thomas. If someone suspects a case of domestic violence, what can they do?
Well, we encourage them to call the police. And if it's in progress, try to dial 911. And our officers take every domestic violence case serious, and we want to help, and we will help all victims of crime.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. I was speaking with Chip Manili, and he's with Tri-County Resources Center, and Delta Police Chief Robert Thomas.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next.